former Kansas City Police Department intelligence detective, and now attorney Gary Jenkins, produced four documentary films, most recently Gangland Wire, true stories of the mob skimming from the Las Vegas casinos in the 1970s. Creator of smartphone app entitled Kansas City Mob Tours. Download it now. Highly sought after speaker for college, corporate, and service organization programs. If you like what you hear, go to ganglandwire.com. Navigate to the shop page. We need you to put a hit out on our donate button. Buy the DVD Gangland Wire or download the Kansas City Mob Tour app. We must pay the Studio Time and Freedom of Information Act requests that we filed with the federal government. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/ganglandwire. Follow true crime storyteller Gary Jenkins on Twitter at Jenks Law. Please subscribe to this podcast and review the show. Gangland Wire True Crime Stories is produced at the Big Dumb Fun Show Studio 4. And now, here's Gary Jenkins.
Well, good evening, folks, and good evening, and say hello to my friend Aaron. Hello, Aaron.
Hello, Aaron.
We're here in the deep, dark confines of Studio 4 telling true crime stories. You know, Aaron, we've talked about the mafia, we've talked about the Ku Klux Klan, we've talked about strip clubs. I'm going to tell you a little story of it's kind of an epiphany story about myself, I think. It was, and being an intelligence unit, you can kind of choose some cases that look interesting and may need some surveillance and or are just interesting. If the chief thinks that a crime victim should have a little extra attention, we would get a call on that. So my partner and myself got assigned to a crime. It was a theft, and it wasn't a very big crime. You know, we actually probably thought it was beneath us to work on this crime, but the guy was a wealthy businessman. So we went out to see Mr. Beal was his name. Tom Beal was his name, and I think he's probably dead now. He had a company, and he was selling lake lots or some kind of real estate in a boiler room kind of a atmosphere over the telephone at 38th and Southwest Traffic Way, just north across the street from it used to be Nichols Lunch. I think mm-hmm. it's Sosa's now, and there's a building there and on that little side road next to the traffic way. And he had that whole building taken up. And so my partner, John Fraser, and I got out there, and he told us that he lost a ship's enunciator. So, of course, we look at each other and say, what's a ship's enunciator? Aaron, do you know what a ship's enunciator is?
I'm not sure.
Well, it was an art object for him. Now, it had come off of a ship. I believe it was the Queen Elizabeth. It wasn't the Queen Mary, because it was in the Queen Mary still in mothballs and
In Long Beach.
So I think it was the Queen Elizabeth. They've stripped it off of there for some. Maybe they stripped that ship. I'm not sure. But it came off of a famous sailing ship, a big cruise liner. And if you've ever seen in the movies where the captain will say to the first mate, you know, all ahead forward, and there's a round object that looks like a clock face, and it has a handle on it, and he'll ring it, and he'll go, ring, ring, and it'll go half speed, mm-hmm. full speed, sure. quarter speed. Well, that's an enunciator.
That's
what it
the
does.
Enunciator.
That's the enunciator, and it sends an electric signal down to the engine room to tell them how fast you want to go. So
did the robbery occur in his residence or in his office?
No, it was in his office. It was in his office. And this thing was brass, and it was used as an art object as in the reception area. It was just sitting in the reception area, and everybody thought it was interesting and fun to look at and ask about. It was kind of a conversation starter.
Wasn't it kind of heavy?
Yeah, it was real heavy. But it disappeared, and nobody knew exactly when it disappeared. Everybody, all of a sudden, somebody said, well, what happened to that thing that was sitting there? Whatever that was.
So they weren't even sure what day it disappeared. They
didn't even know what day it disappeared, but we kind of knew within 2 or 3 days. We had a, you know, 2 or 3 day time frame that we're pretty sure it disappeared, and we kind of narrowed it. We narrowed it down probably to the 1 day, but we weren't for sure. So we started, you know, first thing you go is start interviewing employees, and we go to, kind of had an office manager, and had a lot of people that came and went in a lower, a big open room where they had all these telephones sitting there where people were calling out trying to sell lake lots. And so we were kind of looking forward to interviewing all them because they all had access and had been going in and out of the building, and there was a receptionist there, but she came and went. She wasn't always right there. There was not a lot of traffic into the corporate offices, shall we say. Mm-hmm. She was mainly there to help the owner and a couple of upper level managers, and the people running the phones came in and out of a back door. But they did have access up there. So we got a big long list of all them, and we're going to start making arrangements to interview them. Well, I have to say this is an epiphany story for me, and I call it the case where I learned that it's not always the black man that's the thief. We started interviewing people, and this upper management guy that kind of was the overall manager of the whole building and everybody in it, he said, well, he wanted to steer us to the black cleanup man. And we talked to Mr. Beal, the owner, and he said, you know, that guy does know what that thing means. I had my grandchildren in here one day, and he was in here working, and he took his time and explained to them how it worked and what it was because he had been in the Navy. Mm-hmm. So everybody wanted to focus on the black cleanup guy who had to be the one that took it. And I don't know. I didn't feel comfortable about it because it just was too easy. I don't like it when in a case like this, when mm-hmm. things are too easy and everybody's wanting to focus on one person who just seems a logical person to focus on, partly because he's black. You know, let's face it. Everybody else here was white because he was black.
What, and just because he knew what the thing
and
was?
And then you get this second bit of information that he knew what that was, and then you can surmise from that, well, maybe he knew there was some value to it. I don't know, but you know, you don't really have any choice as investigating officer. We get hold of him.
Well, how many employees were there?
There was probably 50, and we're starting to interview the others too. Mm-hmm. And you just call them in, and or you go out to their house, depending on the circumstance, and you say, okay, do you remember seeing this? Do you know anything about this? And everybody's no. Same with him, and he's with a contractor. So we inform his boss, and of course he's then taken out of that building. That's standard procedure for these cleanup companies. If an employee is accused or even thought about being in an area where something's stolen, they just move him to someplace else. Mm-hmm. And I felt kind of bad about it, but that was, you know, that's just...
He didn't lose his job, though.
I don't think so, no. I'm sure, I know he didn't. So we call him in and interview him, and he's going, you know, yeah, I didn't know about it. Yeah, I was in the Navy. No, I don't know anything about it. So we're kind of at an impasse, and he was real believable to me, and everybody else has been believable, but yet it disappeared, and there's no forcible entry. You know, it was not broken into at night.
But they don't know if it happened during the day, over the weekend.
Yeah, right. And you know, that's a good point, Aaron. I believe this was...
I mean, that area I'm familiar with.
We thought it was on a Monday, but it also... It could have been over the weekend.
Somebody could have just walked through the front door if it was normally unlocked.
Right.
And picked it up and walked back out when no one was watching.
Correct. And so we had an idea. We said, let's try to get some press coverage, and let's put an ad in the paper and offer a reward. So we got a hold of a newspaper reporter, and he thought it was an interesting story because mm-hmm. an interesting art object. We got a little article put in the paper, and same time we had an ad put in the paper and offered I believe, a $500 reward.
Was there some value put on this thing?
You know, I think $2,500. I believe he said he paid $2,500 for it. I'm sure I remember that. He said he mm-hmm. paid $2,500 for it. He offered a $500 reward, and in the ad it said just to call there and to call his. He had a private line, so just call that line. And lo and behold, about 3 or 4 days later, he got a call. And it was a guy, just a, you know, a voice. He had no idea who it was. The guy didn't identify himself.
There was no caller ID at the time.
No caller ID at the time. And the guy said, you know, he said, if you will give me $500, I'll get it back. But he also said...
But did he sound black?
Well, here's what's interesting. And this is another sad commentary on a lot of black men have been blamed for things that they didn't do in this society. And he said that he bought it. Mr. Beal asked him, said, well, did you steal it? And he said, no. He said, I bought it from a black guy at a gas station. And it's like, oh, we're back to our man again.
But presuming that.
Presuming that, you know. And I felt bad about it. But I think we even went back and talked to him again. And of course, he says, you know, I don't know what you're talking about, fellas. I didn't do it. I didn't take it.
Well,
I told you I didn't
take
it.
The guy calls, and he could have actually, you could maybe get the guy who has it now, although it's stolen property. If you gave him the reward, you probably could get him to identify who it was.
Who he bought it from, maybe. Maybe.
Maybe,
but
if you remember.
He did not want to, even though he said he bought it from somebody else, he was innocent of the theft, he still was not wanting to up himself. He would not give a phone number, give a name or anything. And about, I'd say this was the next week, sometime the next week after that, we're 2 weeks into this thing. Mr. Beal gets a phone call and he says, check out by your woodpile. Well, he lived in a great big mansion out in Mission Hills, and there was he had a woodpile pretty close to the street for his fireplace.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went out there and he checked in the woodpile, and there was the ship's Enunciator sitting there. And then the guy calls back after that and he said, did you find it? And he said, yeah. He said, okay. He said, now I want you to leave my reward, the $500, in an envelope out there by that woodpile where you found it. So Mr. Beal says, sure, I'll do that. And so we set a surveillance on that.
And then called the police.
Yeah, and he called us immediately. And actually, we were involved with it all along. And
you mean he didn't go out to the woodpile until... to see if it was there until after you were...
Well, no, I'm sorry. He probably did. You know, he probably did run out. Oh, I'm sure he did. Because he had his home phone number, too. He was calling him at home at this point in time. He seemed to know a lot about Mr. Beal and mm-hmm. where he lived and his home phone number, his office phone number, and all that. Of course, the office number had been in the ad. I mean, yeah,
it was
ad.
Published.
It was published. But... so we,
but you still have no idea who this person is.
We don't have
any
idea who it is. So we set a surveillance on it. One of us gets up in the upper part of his driveway, and another guy down closer to the street. And this was, again, in Mission Hills. Nobody came through there that night. There's two cars that came through there that night. And we just kind of laid down whoever was out on the street just laid down. And we didn't even have any sophisticated vans or anything, and we just had a couple of cars. And we just wrote down those two license numbers, but nobody stopped and got the money. So we get back to the office, and the next day we check those two license numbers, and one of them is some lady that I believe she lived in the area. The other one did not live in the area and was from somewhere further south in Johnson County. I remember that. And so we said, well, let's take a look at this guy. You know, why did he drive up around this circle? This was not a place that you would normally drive to get up by his house. Like mm-hmm. I said, two cars. We were there for 6 hours, and two cars came by.
Overnight, what time, like 2 in the morning?
We were there from about 8 at night till, I want to say, maybe even 4 in the morning, I think. We stayed pretty late. It was sometime between 2 and 4. Late enough that there should not be anybody come by. And so...
when you pulled the
we got the
plates
envelope. We,
and you...
we got the plates. We'd taken the envelope back in that night, and then we got the plates and checked them. And the one lady had a reason to be there. She had a house that was close by. She would have had a reason to drive around through there.
Mm-hmm.
The other guy had no reason that late at night. It was like, I don't know, 11 o'clock or so when he drove through there. So we start checking in him and find out his employment. He works for the phone company. This was back when you had Southwestern Bell telephone guys and going around in their trucks and their hats and they had all this phone work in their office. They had all these lines and everything, mm-hmm. so it would be natural that the phone guy would be in there. So we go back and say, okay, did you have any phone work done over this time? Well, by golly, we had some phone work done over this time. So we get hold of this guy. We call down to Southwestern Bell Security and get hold of his boss. He says, well, yeah, this guy was assigned to do work down at that building during the time that the ship's annunciator disappeared. So, all right, we got us a real suspect.
And he actually had a name.
We got a viable suspect. We've got a name.
His address. You know
his
vehicle.
We know his vehicle.
You know where he works.
We know where he works. He ain't running. So we get him in, and he denies and denies and denies, and we go back. We get hold of Mr. Bale.
Couldn't you, like, do a fingerprint on the annunciator to see if...
You know, that's a good question. We must. We probably did, but there probably was nothing on. He probably had watched enough TV. He was careful enough to wipe it clean before he left it there. It would be easy to do because it was just one big brass thing.
Yeah.
There wasn't any little nooks or crannies on it. It was a glass face and a brass, shiny brass thing, and we did print it. I'd forgotten about that aspect. We did print it, and there weren't any usable prints on it.
Now, so then once you had all this information and you talked with his employer, they weren't going to tip him off.
No, no. Well, as I said, we just called him in to the office, come in and meet us. And he
at
came
the
in.
At the police department?
Down headquarters. We had him come in, and we set him down in the room and read him his rights and started questioning him about it because we knew he did it. By then, we knew he did it. So he finally starts out trying to say...
We didn't have to do any more surveillance see if anybody drove up to try to get the money.
No, it was done. He had his... our crime victim had his property back.
Yeah.
And he was happy.
He wasn't out any money.
He wasn't out any money. He was happy. He was kind of having fun with the whole thing now. So
But this guy that works for the...
phone company.
He's not black.
He's not black. He's just your regular old white guy. He probably didn't have any black linemen or skilled trades at that point in time. They're talking in the 70s. So he won't break down. He won't break down. And we threaten him. And we don't have anything other than he was there that day.
He was in the vicinity.
He was in the vicinity. That's all we got. But we know he did it.
But you told him that.
We told him.
Like, we know you were there.
Yeah.
And you didn't say, and what were you doing there?
Right. Oh, well.
And he goes,
he was working there. Sure, he was in and out of there.
Well, the office building, yeah. I'm just saying, but then when he drove by the owner of the business's house.
He didn't have any explanation for that.
He didn't give any.
And that's when he's kind of started breaking down then. You know, when you start catching a guy up and catching him in lies and no explanation for his actions, you know, first he denies it. Then he finally says, well, you know, maybe I did drive up by there. You know you're on the way. That's kind of part of the interrogation process. When you get him
to
break
a little
bit. Oh, yeah, we were with him for an hour and 15, 20 minutes before we finally got that little break, just that little edge where he said, well, maybe I did drive up by there. Well, why'd you drive up by there? Well, there was a girl. I know a girl up there. Well, no, you don't. This is nothing but mansions up in here, and I don't think you do. Well,
Why didn't he just say he was lost?
Well, finally, yeah, and he probably did try that at least once, but finally he breaks down to his old cover story that he did buy it from a black guy at a service station, but we know he stole it. That's too much of a coincidence mm-hmm. that he happened to work in that same building. Then he ran into a black guy who stole this out of the same building he's working in at a gas station hours and blocks away.
It doesn't sound that unfamiliar to me. I work on Broadway. I know people come through the door
Selling stuff all the time.
I've never seen a ship's annunciator.
Probably not yet. That's the one they call you out to the trunk. Say, hey, man, check this out in the trunk. I'll let you have it for $50.
Or the shopping cart, whichever
the shopping
they have.
Cart, yeah. That's the low rent thieves, the shopping cart thieves.
But he says, reverse back to his old story. I found it. I bought it from a guy.
Right. And once you get him that far, you got him committed then. You got him committed. And so you just keep working on hammering him and telling him he's a liar.
Buying stolen merchandise is still a crime.
Right. So we got him on buying stolen merchandise and threatening to tell his boss and all that, and he's freaking out on that. So we get a hold of Mr. B, and we say, okay, here's where we are now. The only way we could really ever successfully prosecute him is if he would admit it.
Yeah,
and you're really not going to be able to prosecute him for buying stolen property. I mean, you could. That's a lot. That's a good.
It's a misdemeanor.
That's a good threat, but it ain't going to happen. It's just not. You don't have. You just don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
Buying stolen property is really complicated and hard to prove beyond a shadow or a reasonable doubt. Mm-hmm.
And there was no video cameras or anything where they could see.
Yeah, no video. Today we'd have video of it. Phone man taking the art object. But so Mr. Beale says, well, he said, you know, I would like to resolve this. I don't really want to go to court. You know, he was a big bucks businessman. He didn't want to go to court and testify against this guy. And so he said, okay, he said, I tell you what, I won't prosecute. So we go back to him. We say, okay, we've got a deal. He won't prosecute, but you got to admit that you did it. And he goes for it. So he admits it, the whole deal. And we can go back.
Did you make him recant the story then?
Yeah, oh yeah, we may. You got to make him go back over everything and
question and the detail
him,
of
make
their,
him eat a little
of their admission.
Make them eat their own words. Well,
for the point of what? You're not going to actually prosecute him.
Right, right. Just for your own ego's sake, I would imagine. But we, you know, he breaks down.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a confession. We don't take a formal typewritten signed confession. We got a confession from him. We were able then to call the black guy's boss and say, you know, he didn't do it. Absolutely didn't do it. Here we found out who did it. We go back to the office and our boss says, okay, what happened? We tell him. He said, okay, that's fine, but he says, I'm calling his boss and telling him. We said, okay, we kind of intimated we wouldn't tell his boss if he'd break down to us. And Sergeant Lehman, Charlie Lehman
says, he would lose his job.
Said, right. Charlie Lehman says, oh, no, we can't let this guy get totally away with this just because he broke down.
If he did it once, who's to say he's not going to, hasn't done it before,
if he did
couldn't
it once,
do it again?
Correct. If he did it that time, he'd done it before, and he'll do it again. So that is a story of the great enunciator caper and the time that this young detective learned that you don't always want to suspect the first black man that comes into your view on a crime. So, having said all that, I think that it's time to let these folks go. You got any more questions, Aaron?
Mm.
That's just another one of the 7 million stories in the Naked City. not very dangerous, not very exciting, but
true.
True and
seems
interesting.
Seems to me that for an officer who's in the intelligence unit, it's a waste of valuable resources to send you after. And how many weeks were you on this?
Oh, we probably spent a total of one long night and parts of about 5 days.
Interviewing the various employees.
And
then when you nailed the guy and you go, well, let's get him in.
Right. We didn't spend a lot of time on it.
For an art object that at the time was worth maybe $2,500.
Right, right. Yeah.
So it was a lot of money maybe in the 70s. But
right. But, you know, I mean,
there's no way today you could get clothed officer, a uniformed officer, that much time over a $2,000, you know, 5-6 days over a $2,000.
Well, that's
piece
probably
of art.
True. Things
unless,
have
of course, the person whose
if you're
art
connected.
It is are really well connected.
Do you think that if one of the halls or the blocks had some little thing that disappeared that they wanted it solved and they got on the phone, do you think that wouldn't happen today?
Well, you're not going to tell your sergeant or who your boss is. No,
you're not. Plus, it was interesting. I wanted to do it. It was a lot of fun. I like those interesting mysteries. A lot better than working on the dumb police or the dumb people out there.
I don't know. If you had a choice between tracking down a ship's enunciator and watching a girls dance at a strip club.
Well, you know, we do it all. We were a full service police department. Yeah. I hope they are today. I don't know what they do today.
Yeah, I mean, people working for the telephone company don't seem nearly as dangerous as the Ku Klux Klan.
No, they weren't.
Or the Kansas City mob.
You're right, Aaron.